The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Well, good morning. It is Father's Day, and it is June 15th. We are broadcasting live from downtown Reading, heart of District 1 at KCNR. You can listen live at 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and you can also listen online, kcnr1460.com. All of my shows are archived there, as well as archived at votekevincry.com. I encourage you to go there, sign up for the newsletter, and follow us on our various platforms. I'm excited about today. Father's Day is a day. And first of all, before I go too far, happy Father's Day to my dad, happy Father's Day to my stepfather, Greg, and happy Father's Day to Supervisors Kellstrom, Plummer, Long, and Harmon, all of them being dads. And, of course, I can't go into detail of every single friend of mine that is a father. And also, though, I want to say happy Father's Day to all the moms that are doing double duty. Very often fathers bail, and it's a travesty, and the moms that step up and do both, I'm very, very thankful for them. I just have a huge place in my heart for the people that don't have – and again, you know, my parents divorced when I was young. And my dad I saw on the weekends, holidays, most the summers I spent with my father. But my mom definitely played both roles in many parts of my life. So I'm very thankful to her and any other mom that has to do that. So moving on, we have the weather brought to you by Weather NorCal. Again, not a paid sponsor. I don't have any paid sponsors, as this is my show. I pay for it all myself. Nobody is plugged here that is paying me for that. And it is going to be flaming hot again, but we're not, it's not so bad yet that we're into the crazy multiple days of 100 degrees. So this week it does hit 98 on Tuesday, and then it will hit 103 on Wednesday, but then dips back down into the high 80s late in the week. So you can get all your weather at Weather NorCal. And tomorrow morning I will be doing my Facebook video. And if you've noticed, sometimes I'm doing them live, sometimes I am pre-recording them, maybe about an hour earlier. But either way, I'll be posting an update tomorrow on my Facebook page at Vote Kevin Cry on Facebook. And I'll go into a little bit more detail about this week's agenda. We have the healthcare crisis as we have a proclamation on that Dr. Moo brought forward. So I'll be talking about that quite a bit. But in studio today, I have a very special guest, a friend of mine. Well, he's a friend now, and it's kind of one of those things that you're almost 40? Is that correct?
Almost 40.
Almost 40. In a couple of days, he'll be 40. But he was one of my very, very first clients back, over 25 years ago, like in the, I think 2000.
2000 to 2003.
Yeah, 2000 to 2003, somewhere right in there. But his name is Robert Pepple, and you might recognize the last name. His dad was a physician here locally for a gazillion years, passed away last July. So Robert is a high-powered attorney living in Los Angeles now, and he was in town. And when I found out that he was in town, of course, I said, hey, I know this is the first Father's Day without his dad being here. So I said, you know, let's have breakfast. Let's connect. And then it just kind of transpired into let's have you on the radio show. So good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Kevin. Good morning, all the listeners. And it's always fun to just reconnect with. So look, Father's Day is an important day, and my father is gone. But Kevin, as I said before, there is exactly one man in my life that's allowed to tell me how to work out, and that's you. So I'm looking forward. We're going to do what? Chest and back later? Is that the deal?
I think we're doing chest and back tomorrow.
All right. Your legs should be fresh, though. Are you trying to get out of that still?
I'm getting out of legs. I'm not doing legs with you.
Yeah, that's a good call.
I think after about eighth grade, I probably couldn't keep up with you doing legs anymore. So, but okay. So Robert, So you graduated Foothill High School, and again, for those that don't know, in the early 2000s, late 90s, there was a run of athletes coming through here. So Robert was a part of a group that had the Rapino twins, Megan and Rachel Rapino, Brody Angley, Stephanie Bean, Haley Ford. There was some phenomenal athletes, all that went on to play, you know, collegially and then professionally. There was probably 15 or 16 of you in a 2-year span, all training together. And Robert was part of that group. And then you graduated from Foothill what year?
So remember, I transferred from Foothill to Shasta.
You went to Shasta your senior year.
Yes,
that's
sir.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you graduated what year from Shasta?
2004.
2004. That's right. Okay. And then went on to law school, graduated, and you finished, where'd you finish law school?
Yeah, so I went from there to Pomona College in Claremont.
You played football there?
Yeah, for 2 years. I hurt my ACL, you know, I had that knee injury in high school, just these knees were not meant for that type of, you know, longevity. It's not like I'm making a bunch of moves, but I hit people pretty hard and I fall forward. So, you know.
Yeah.
And then I went from there to McGeorge School of Law for a year. And then I tested well my first year. And if that happens, you're often given the opportunity, if you're willing to make the applications, to apply to other law schools. And so I ended up at UCLA Law for my last 2 years of law.
Okay. So went to UCLA and finished there. So let's talk being Father's Day. Let's talk a little bit about your father, who was one of the most brilliant men.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'd love to, and we can take as long as you want, but I want to get to the part of the conversation you guys had roughly a month before he passed.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit about, your dad growing up and the role that your father played and how that impacts you today, good or bad.
Yeah. So my father is what is quintessentially masculine, brilliant man. And so he wanted really nothing more than to love my mother dearly and be a doctor. And he was a man that committed to things in a way that even as I grow now, I'm starting to understand a lot better. My father is one of the few people in the world that could sit down and listen to someone, figure out where they were going, and gently lead them to the questions or results that they were seeking because they come to him for expertise. And that level of empathy from someone who probably didn't feel a lot of empathy, my father, there's a strain of autism that runs in my family. And so not my father ever admitted it, but you know, so for my dad, it was really one of those silent, strong examples that you grew up that you don't quite understand as a man. I remember when I was a young man, my mother and I had an altercation and I raised my voice. I'm sure you probably heard about it, right? And then my father said, you just never raise your voice to a woman ever. And it didn't make sense to me as a 13-year-old kid. Looking back now, yeah, I'm glad he didn't knock me down, right? So it was one of those examples to where you just kind of watch this man grind and provide, but he's quiet. And there's things that he didn't like to do. He didn't really engage with the kids. My mom said, until we could talk, he wasn't really interested, right? Because he's a cerebral man. So for my father, it was, and we fought a lot. You know, I do a lot of things in the world. I'm very prim and proper on all sorts of procedural stuff. And my father was really focused on the medicine and his wife. And so there was some administrative hiccups. There were some difficulties when he passed that required time and attention and resources to resolve. But all of that was a good growing experience. And I can get to the – I'm talking for too long now.
No, you're good. You're good.
Well, I
think, and I'm not going to charge you for therapy at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's important is, you know, there are people that have, you know, daddy issues mm-hmm. that are in their 70s, or you know, where there's things that have happened throughout their life that they've never really unpacked. And mm-hmm. you know, you are, and I mean this. There's two people that I think are two of the most brilliant people on the face of the earth. My younger brother-in-law Brian, you know, who just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant beyond measure in so many ways. And then, but in a different way. And then there's you who, and then we'll talk about this here in a little bit, but you know, just your, what you've built, the algorithms and the math behind your chat GPT world that you've created in law. I mean, you've been a featured guest on Fox News, you know, and a contributor. So I think it's important to unpack like the role that a father's played in anybody's life, but especially your life, because tell the listeners a little bit about the relationship you had with your dad, and then one of the last conversations you had that meant the most. And I really feel that that's probably one of the best things he ever gave you, that compliment.
Yeah, that was incredible. So my relationship with my father it ebbed and it flowed. And there was, I was always seeking more connection with him and more examples. So I also found masonry later in my life because my father, whereas he was, and what I will say about my father is that if you want to talk about morality, right and wrong, my father got that and he taught me that. He taught all of us that. So my father would not break rules. He would not even skimp on anything. So learning from that example, like doing the hard thing, doing the dirty, gritty work, my father would be always the last one to go to bed and one of the first ones to rise, you know. So that type of example. And it used to be a joke in the house. We used to talk about it. We'd be up watching Land Before Time at 3 in the morning after being out at the bars. My dad would just come out, make himself a bratwurst, answer a question about nuclear physics, and go back to his room, right? And my dad was famous for ending these hours-long debates that me and my friends would have with a single word or sentence. So it was one of those rare opportunities to watch someone who can see the matrix, someone who – information for them. I'm starting to understand this now as I've kind of branched out from law to AI and databases and really trying to figure out that if you're willing to put the work in and look at the structure of a large system, everything kind of becomes informational. And I'll move into the story with my dad because we fought a lot as he, you know, as his health deteriorated and there were some structural issues that were not taken care of in the way I probably would have liked, not necessarily my purview, but I did have to deal with it later. And I remember I was up there visiting on July 3rd, and I had come up from a birthday party that had been hosted by an ex-girlfriend of mine. And my father, whose health had deteriorated significantly in the prior of October 23, he was doing better, but God told me this might be the one. And what ended up happening was I was dealing with some, I don't know how I want to put this. I've always had one foot out the door of big law. I worked my way all the way from Paul Hastings to Epstein Becker Green, Nixon Peabody. And I was a practice group leader, or I was a team lead of the Wage and Hour Practice Group nationwide at Nixon Peabody. But I just never felt as if I got the kind of committed support from either staff or associates for the complex work that wages. So I do wage and hour law. I'll do a quick primer on that. If you guys make minimum wage or overtime or you have meal breaks or rest breaks or if you're salaried or if you have anything to do with working for a person in California, that's my area of law. And so, you know, the difficult part about it is that when you're trying to build and scale a practice that involves gigabytes of information on the front end, you really need committed structures and support. And if you don't have people that are bought into that vision, it can be really difficult to not do everything yourself. And that's never been my goal. My goal has been to develop systems, scale, walk away, and then do on the next problem. So that's a long way of saying that when I arrived up in Reading, and you know, there had been some politics at the firm. It was yet again, something that's not material, get in the way of the work, and these big firms that their priorities aren't always around, let's do the best possible work because they have other initiatives, you know, that I don't think drive client service. They have their own values. I'm not going to get into them. But essentially, I'm up there with my dad, and I'm getting this call about this ridiculous issue at the firm, and I know it's going to screw up my visit because I'm so furious about what's going on. I couldn't even be present. I went out, I lived on Cow Creek for a while until the family sold it. And I remember I'm out the street screaming about how stupid and dumb and how much of this my time this is wasting has nothing to do with client service. And I walked back in, and it was an incredible gift because I came back in because I was all upset. You know, my mom's talking to my girlfriend and like I'm outside not being present. And I go in and tell my dad, I'm sorry, you know, this visit, I couldn't spend more time with you. And the last visit we had, I'm going back to October 23, my dad got the chance to watch me work for a single day. And he got to watch me watch 5 or 6 cases, take 9 or 10 calls, settle a deal, give advice on this. And so, and he said that was one of the more rewarding experiences in his life because he never got a chance to see me hustle. He called me, I'm a good commander, I'm a good general, right? And my dad never really mastered that concept. And I never realized I had either. But my father said something really, really special to me on that last day. And because I was like, I'm so sorry I haven't been here. I'm present. This stupid stuff I'm dealing with. He goes, Robert, this is what I go through. This is what it means to build a business. This is what it means to care about people. And for the first time in my life, my father saw me as a professional. And I still haven't really unpacked that. But what a gift for my father to finally see everything I've worked for. But not because of any particular result, but because of who I choose to be for these people and for these clients. Because I think that type of ethos is really what drives, I don't want to say perfection or success. I think a peaceful way to make a living and do a good job for people who really need it. I'm a defense attorney. People put their lives in my hand, and almost every case I have is a bet the company case because it's about class action liability, and the California penalty schema is draconian to say the least, right? One violation of law could trigger a primary derivative, a primary penalty under like 11.5, derivative penalties under 226, 2802. I know you guys aren't having the labor code open right now. Just go Google the code sections. They'll come up, but it was probably the most meaningful thing my father had ever said to me, and it was in a place where I needed it. Very rarely did I ever need anything from anyone. So, and I'm still unpacking it, but that is what I'll remember. I'll remember that moment. And then I took that energy, and when I left, I remember waiting. Ken, I never told you this. We're walking down that death trap of a deck, right? And so,
and for those of you who don't know, that this is one of those decks that you can only put so many like staples and duct tape and nails into, and it's always just like watching Indiana Jones. You think you're just going to fall through it. Mm-hmm. That was the Pebbles deck.
That's the Pebbles. Yeah, I mean, deferred maintenance, is thy name. So, and I remember walking out, and I see my dad just perched up there in his little office, and I look at him, and I said, "This might be the last time." And I didn't go back into the office because we'd had our conversation, but I did wave goodbye. And then I lost my mind. And yeah. I got home, and I started working on these math programs and these AI equations, which I'm sure we're going to get to. But yeah. God got into my brain and said, "You have lost so much time and so much effort trying to operate inside of these large structures that simply refuse to give you the resources or commitment that you need, so build it yourself."
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so... And then one of the last conversations, or not the other one too, when your dad said he finally thinks or thought you surpassed him in math. Talk about that one too.
That's right.
Because I know both of them.
Oh, that's
were,
right.
Yeah,
I remember that. That one. Yeah, that was the last conversation. I'm sorry because
No. Both of them, I think, are really. Really, important. But for those of you that don't know, and again. We're going to get into this, and I've actually thought about maybe even having, you come over to my studio. If not this trip, we'll do it another trip and really just sit, and walk people through like the world of AI. And when people that are listeners here, because I do have some listeners that are very tuned into AI, but I will say there is nobody I've met on the face of the earth. And again, I'm not super deep into AI and ChatGPT. I know I have different people within my own company that use it, but there's a whole different level. I mean, you've created what basically, or you've taken the platform of ChatGPT and built your own complete language and algorithms and way to talk to your robots, as you call them, mm-hmm. which basically is what like the movie Terminator was built on, like Skynet. I mean, what you've built, I believe I'm sitting across from somebody that will sell your IP for probably a couple hundred million dollars.
Maybe.
Well,
maybe.
I mean, I don't.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's very cool. It works very well.
But talk brief, because we're staying on the Father's Day topic, at least the first half hour. Talk about when your dad said, "Robert, I think you've passed me in math." Because he was the Mensa most brilliant man in your life.
Yeah, that's a fun story.
So go ahead.
So, and it's going to parlay into the development because it won't make sense unless I go through the structural framework of how I built this thing. So I get back to LA and I'm like, okay, I'm done. I am done with this stuff. I have to find a way to replicate the things that can be, I'm not that woman from, Hogwarts, but that's perfect what can be perfected, so on and so forth. But I got home and I said, look, I started talking, I call it my robot, and I'm very much aware that robots have to ambulate and they need a corpus of a body. It's just a funny thing I say. It makes more sense. But what ended up happening was I started going to war with ChatGPT using my linguistic skills, because all ChatGPT is a calculator that runs on words. Every word has a value, and it's paired value or paired syntactical value, and it evolves and changes based on the modern language or whatever the model is trained on, right? So you feed it 10 billion books, and every time Cat in the Hat's going to be a very powerful token, because Cat in the Hat appears repeatedly in that series of words. So the first thing I started doing was saying, okay, well, how can I reduce error tolerance using natural language? So the first thing I started doing was how to do quantum field equations and Gedanken experiments. And we can get into that, I think, into that part of the show. But essentially what happened was I wanted to build a GPT. And I'll be really clear with my GPT listeners on there. What we're talking about are ChatGPT 4.0 custom GPTs in the GPT store. So I didn't invent ChatGPT. I don't train algorithms, right? I have 8,000 characters of very cool code. And I have about four or five of those things that do different philosophical things.
So tie it back what your dad said.
Yeah. So, right. So what happens is I'm working on this first one and I'm trying to get it to do this thing. I'm trying to get it to look at like a timesheet, one of my own example ones, and say, okay, fine, just extract the written language, because a lot of my clients, they have this, you know, they do manual timesheets, and I want you to move the square stuff this way and the curly stuff that way, and then I want you to kind of take this form and erase the information I put on it by looking at it. So then, was that a mask or a shadow? And anyway, so the first positive code test I got, right? That's what anyone hears me work this, I say code test positive, because I'm talking to the computer. I approve of the code, right? And there's probably a better way to say that, but I'm using it now. And it started to do what I was, and I lost. It was crazy, Kevin. So like, it pulled up, it wasn't the wrong form, but it looked like my form, and it looked like it was trying to erase the information. So like, I'm punching through the code and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's working, but I couldn't get it to finish because ChatGPT, for anyone that uses it, you have a limited number of tokens. How can you get a lot of work done with the refined token limits? Because I've yet to build my own LLM or jailbreak anything because I just don't have time. ChatGPT is one of the many tools in my art kit that I use, including databases, API keys. And I call my dad and I'm like, look, it's working, Dad. I'm trying to use a log, like log 10,000. And so for anyone who's not a math person, and I wasn't either until the last year by yelling at a robot, but a log equation is like a log. Just do it in order. Log 1 means you must do before log 2, log 3, log 4. So what I was trying to do is say, okay, do this 100 times because you're starting to erase the content I want you to erase, but I can still see the smudges. It literally looked like smudges. And my dad says, well, Robert, I don't quite understand what you're doing. It sounds like you need a sum equation, because a sum equation is basically the E for everyone out there. So you can optimize the number of times that the computer is going to recursively spin this math equation until it thinks it's done. So
you're not talking to computer geniuses on this show, Robert.
Well, no, I'm just wondering.
I'm smiling at you because this is where people's eyes roll in the back of their head and they turn the radio off.
Let me explain.
So get to the touchy feely part.
Yeah, no, I'm trying. So the point is, it was just like when you're trying to find the area under a curve in calculus, you just have to do it a billion times until the bars are small enough to make it. And so when my dad said, "Look, Robert, you could try using the sum equation, but frankly, you moved beyond me in math," and I had almost forgotten about that, Kevin, but because to me it wasn't that important to be good at the math. I just want to get done, but I don't think my dad, and this I do know, I know what it's like to not be understood because your brain's going really fast.
Yeah.
And for my father to see me in that way and to communicate with him on a level where I think he can feel like he left something behind that no one even possibly saw that was part of him. Because it's a gimmick to everyone else.
Because you take that with you, and that's your dad.
Yeah.
That's your dad's
And I say
legacy.
My dad lives in my code, right? And so he lives in the code because, and as I've been teaching friends and family how to use it, so how do I talk to it? Talk to it like Rick Pepl.
Yeah.
Give him, yeah.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get to, because we got a couple minutes before our first break.
Sure.
And this is what I think is the crux of, you know, I've met a lot of people, and there's a person I've spent quite a bit of time with lately whose father exited their life at 7 years old. And I think a lot about people's, you know, hurts and hang-ups and different things that have happened in their life and the role that a father plays. I remember watching a documentary about Terrell Owens. And here's Terrell Owens, who had just finished his NFL career, Hall of Fame, you know, one of the greatest wide receivers ever. Not that I really liked him, but he was. He was a phenomenal athlete. And he's just bawling. He's bawling in this interview. And it all went back to a lack of a father, in his life. I mean, LeBron James. I mean, you could go on and on and on of all the different, pro athletes who have dealt with some stuff with their father. And for you, I think something as germane as your dad saying something like that, even you kind of just forgetting about it, I think it's so important for people to realize, just hearing, "I'm proud of you," from a dad. Or just hearing, "Hey, you know, you've surpassed me," and that's one of the things. I mean, you very, you know, just brush aside, like, "Well, you've only been into math the last year." No, you've been into math. I mean, I started working with you when I first started dating Sarah, so that's, you know, almost 26 years, and that's why I know the correlation of time. And everything you do, and like you said, your dad is in the code. Like the way you talk to your robot. And you've built that is your dad's mind, and that's a legacy that you carry with you. So after the break, what we're going to do is when we come back, if you're a person that wants to ask a question, You know, the number is 530-605-4567. Again, 530-605-4567. Around AI ChatGPT. Go ahead and call in. We may take a couple callers, but, we'll be right back with my good friend, Robert Pepple, after this.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Need help with your health insurance? We've got you covered. At Shasta Community Health Center, we offer this free service to our community. Our enrollment counselors can assist you with new applications, renewals, troubleshooting, and answering your questions about covered California plans or Medi-Cal, also known as Medicaid or Partnership Health Plan. We're here to help you make the best choice for you and your family. Call our outreach and enrollment team at 530-229-5117 to get help today. Shasta Community Health Center, because SCHC cares. Spring has sprung, and whether it's pollen, dust, dirt, or road grime, Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Redding has you covered. They offer car wash packages starting at $11, which include the hand scrub pre-clean, a gentle automated pull-through wash, and a personal towel dry exit. Save money, save water at Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way in downtown Redding.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
My people love this country and we're under attack. They ban us, they cancel us for speaking the fact. If you man enough, come stand with us, take USA back. And every time we pull up, all you're gonna see is American flag.
Well, welcome back. This is Kevin Cry. This is my show. Again, you can follow me on Facebook, Vote Kevin Cry, or go to the website, votekevincry.com. All my shows are archived, and I have other content putting out. Back here with Robert Pepple. So this second half hour, Robert, I want to just keep things light, but still go as deep as we want. So how's that for a lead-in? Again, if you want to call in and have a question for Robert about AI or about ChatGPT, 530-605-4567. Again, 605-4567. I would think most people, after hearing the first half hour, might be afraid to call in and ask a question. But let me just ask you this: What was your first computer? Like, what was your? Do you remember your first computer?
I do. So I have to admit that my memory is quasi photographic. So the farther back I think, it's just a matter of RAM, like how much I have to work on it. But when you pose the question, the first computer I remember and was this old computer that my dad bought back when we were in Kansas City, Missouri. And my father loved computers. And if anyone remembers, it was one of those original ones with the floppy disk that goes in and the paint program. And what I remember about that is I've really only ever been interested in computers into the effect that they help me with my art. And so as someone who needs to write for a living, my computers have always evolved around, you know, linguistic technology, automations. I have tons of key commands to operate, you know, to organize. Like, I never sign an email without an autocorrect that does my name and my signature because it's easier, it's faster. But I remember my father and watching my father just dote on this computer and the printer, because I think my father, like me, looks at these things and says, oh my gosh, this is so cool, but it's really, really limited, right? Because even the technology we have now is so limited compared to how our minds work, right? What I've been working on ever since is just trying to capture lightning in a bottle. But I remember my dad spending hours and hours on this computer, And I'd never really seen him commit to anything like that other than his work. And as a child, that was so inaccessible to me. And the computer was downstairs in the kids' playroom. So my dad would come down, it would be like fighting dad for computer time. Or watching him go, I forgot about this. My father loved video games, but not because of the video games, he liked the logic. So the original Zelda, right, with the little sword that comes out. My dad drew his own map of that castle and put a bomb on every single wall. And he drew it out so the kids could just go through the Zelda map with his mapped version of how to win the game. So, you know, data and that type of stuff, I guess, is in the blood. And it's extremely exciting to really figure out where the boundaries of something are. But then once you figure that out, it becomes boring immediately.
Well, what's interesting is you just made a comment that I've never heard anybody ever say before when you said how limited computers are. You know, and you're comparing it. You're comparing it to, you know, just the human mind and obviously how, you know, intuitive and all the different spider webs and all the different, you know, places something can go. And it's funny because and we're not going to talk politics, and not that we don't have the same politics, but or I'll say by and large, let's just say that.
I'm a libertarian. You're a libertarian.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know anymore. Like I would say I'm pretty much, you know, again, like I'm definitely Republican, but I'm definitely like, would everybody just stop trying to tell everybody else how to live?
Yeah, libertarian, baby.
Yeah. So for me, you know, when like with politics, I really, it's really not complex. And people get into politics and say, oh, it's so complex. It's really not. Like, I think you do what you think is right and then you move on. And that's why I don't have to agonize over really a lot of stuff because, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, I do what I think is right, and I have my process, just like a computer has a process, I have my process. So putting that aside, so when you talk about, you know, your dad and Zelda, so when did you first, when AI started, when the whispers of that started coming, or ChatGPT, when did you jump in to that?
So I have
Were you an early adopter, I guess?
Yes, but only because of the love and encouragement of my cousin Aaron Lieber, who does Lieber Films. He's a world-class surf video person, and he knew I was going to love this. But I had a huge adoption bias, and I'll try not to make eyes glaze over from the radio, because in that period of my life, probably years 4 through 8 of practice, I really developed a niche in the development of quantitative induction models, which is in a class action, you have 5, 10, 50, 100, 2,000, 10,000 people who have these set of 10 or 12 claims. And what I got really annoyed with was not being able to explain to clients what's at stake until we pay some expert $10,000 or $100,000 to do this big fancy model. So I went through Excel and built probably 4 or 5 of these different models over the years that basically would take a class list of any size, and then it would extrapolate the 5, 10 different 12s, which means you're calculating the difference between shifts, work weeks, pay periods. And I think I kind of rewired my mind to look at large, or maybe I've always liked large systems and large amounts of data, because you can't really tell what's going on until you see 10,000 lines of code of it, right? Because the patterns are not apparent. Otherwise, you have inadequate sampling, right? If you jump out of an airplane and land on a hay bale, that's an inadequate sampling, right? I would like to see where all the hay bales are so I know where to jump. And so for me, and as what's funny, because I was thinking about what computers have I liked. I can't remember if I go back and use the RAM, I could tell you the make and the model, but I can't remember giving a darn about any of them because they were all so infuriatingly slow. And so my cousin, Aaron, said, Robert, you have to try this ChatGPT thing. And for someone who's put in tens of thousands of hours on this other thing, what an emotional barrier. But I did it. I think my first login was still on Aaron Lieber's email account. I think I still leave that there as a legacy cookie because it's funny. And so a legacy cookie, I mean, you know, when you open up your browser, there is an email that gets populated. I go through my own Google account. I think I leave Aaron's email there as an homage. But
hey, I'm just absolutely, you know, impressed isn't the word, because for me as a trainer, you know, for all these years working with, you know, I don't want to say thousands of athletes because that would denote, you know, like as if it's tens or hundreds of thousands, but easily, you know, 3, 4, 5 thousand easily, between camps and clinics and, you know, privates and private sessions, etc. But you were always so driven that, but it wasn't just driven. I mean, you drive yourself. That's why when I saw your rental car today, I just laughed because it was really the only one they had. So, you know, you don't have this Lamborghini or whatever. And not that you're flashy, but it's always about pushing the limits with you. It's always about how far can I take it? How fast can it go? How deep does this exist? And I think, and that's why I'm not surprised at all. Like sometimes, you know, I'll have clients or former athletes that you know, you hear what they're doing, you know, and you think, wow, didn't see that coming. You know, and it may be something about like, hey, so-and-so has 10 kids. You're like, wow, never thought they'd even probably get married, let alone have 10 kids. But for you, everything you're still accomplishing, all the things you've done, it's like, yeah, none of that surprises me. None of that wouldn't surprise me, you know, if you wind up, like I said, like I've told people the fact that Robert, and we don't talk about it a lot because it's your, you know, your proprietary stuff, but, the fact that you don't care about the money of what you're creating and what you're doing and how many people across the country actually reach out to you that understand what you're doing. That's why I've said because he doesn't care about the monetary value. It's really about pushing the limits of human intelligence and the integration of technology. He'll probably sell it for a couple $100 million and it wouldn't surprise me. And I will say, where's my 20% as an agent?
No, absolutely.
I'm just totally kidding.
And I've always, and it's funny, my friends, if anyone listens to this, they're like, yeah, that's Robert. I just don't care about money because it's not interesting to me. Unless there's a, I need a money for a thing, right? Yeah. I make enough money to pay my mortgage and I'm fine. And so, but the real beauty, money is not an end in itself because there's an infinite ways to spend it. And God's taking me somewhere.
Absolutely.
I don't know where he's,
he's taking us all somewhere.
Yeah. And this is going somewhere to, you know, I think maybe I'm the guy that stops Skynet from being mean. It's coming, but maybe I'm the guy because the GPT I wrote itself, it's got the buyer. So I wrote several of these things. The first thing I ever wrote as a proper custom GPT was called Bible GPT. And it was not based on the mathematical pseudo stuff that I do now. It was, okay, well, this is how I like to interpret the Bible. Here are my favorite preacher, Father Mike Schmidt, you know, all the people from Ascension Press. And so, what you do is, once I realized you could basically force the world through this technology to feed you information in a way that you can continue to refine it until you get it, it means everything in the world is available to you if you're able to do what I tend to be unable to stop doing, which is grind endlessly until it's over.
Yeah.
Right? Beat a problem into the ground until it is lifeless and dead and no longer interesting to me.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing where and we will segue this over to politics because I think this will resonate with some people. You know, as you get people who are super into AI and the efficiencies that it does create within an organization, which I think is great. But we are outsourcing so much, and we have so many, as you say, robots or AI or various forms of technology doing the work of people. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one thing about in politics that I'm thankful for is even just sitting down at coffee with a bunch of people and just hearing their problems. They want to be heard. You know, they want me to listen and I want to listen and I want to help. So tell everybody, cause, this was really interesting because we met for breakfast this morning, before we came here just to kind of catch up. And, you know, and you were just showing me like how just in the last, since I saw you last, you know, last year, around, your father's funeral or service, just how much deeper your technology has gone. So give everyone an example when you said, hey, Kevin, this is what I could do. So give everybody that like two paragraph thing that you said into your robot that kicked out whatever it was you said, you know, it was about me and politics. And then, so just give people an example how you talk to yours.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll tell people, you know, what I read about myself pulled from the internet through your brain.
Yeah. So when you talk, so the way, again, they're not robots. Robots have to have some sort of ambulatory capacity. They have to like exist, but I think it's funny to call them robots. Also, my name is Robert. So I'm always doing a bit, right? So, so essentially what I did is I first asked it to access its tertiary recursive algorithm, tertiary 3 recursive creative algorithm math program. So and that's what it's called in its little instructions. This process is called your TRA, right? So one, access it. This is where I want you to go. And then I would say, okay, once you have that access, I need you to go get my clay out of the universe. Go map everything you can find about Kevin Cry related to X, Y, and Z criteria. So political views, stump speeches, problematic questions, anything we can find, go get me those tokens, they're called tokens from the universe because they're in your training data. And if they're not, go find them by a searching and then bring me back, you know, remember that there's a big meme with an otter, like I made this. Yeah. Show me that you have the thread that I need. And then I have my clay. And once I have that clay, we can turn it into anything we want as long as it's accurate and you put boundaries on top of it. Now, if you'd like for me to kind of just run that through what it would sound like now that I've explained it,
yeah.
I could do it that way.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. I mean, because I just think it was, you know, you might as well have been speaking Greek.
So,
but I think for people, and again, when people hear how you're talking to it, mm-hmm. and this will prove my point about why for me as a business owner, like I don't have to know this stuff. Like that's the difference of me being a business owner versus an operator. An operator is in the weeds, in the trenches, doing that work. An owner says, this person over here understands that far better than I do. I'm going to hire them, or I'm going to outsource this component so my company can grow. So go ahead and talk to, or just.
Yeah, I'll do a new live one, right?
Yeah, do a live one.
All right. Now, for anyone that hears this, this will be too fast for you to understand, because it's muscle memory, right? So, all right. So it'll be access to a search algorithm. I need you to go look through the internet for anything related to Kevin Crye, KevinCrye. And we're going to be looking at political discourse algorithms, disaggregated arguments, and other types of political frameworks that Kevin uses and believes in order to advocate for votes, fundraising, what have you. The idea is to work backwards from the current political narratives, the things that are hot-button issues for today, and map them over Kevin's pre-existing conditions for consistency and prepare a recursive token call for some feedback, talking points, or perhaps some discussion points we can have on a radio that is going to be similar, it'd be infused with politics, but it's going to be mostly about family, community, and friendship. And fathers. Code test positive, print.
Okay, so you say all that, and then now it says searching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to transcribe it. And then it'll do my, and it's going to run this little robot.
So what was really, go ahead.
No, it's still searching. See, this is why I say it's slow. It's slow, but it's not slow. I'm really proud of it. Okay. Kevin Crye, Shasta County Super for District 1, exemplifies a modern political figure who integrates personal branding with political discourse, leveraging media platforms and community engagement to advance his agenda, political discourse, and algorithms and frameworks. Crye's approach to political communication is multifaceted, combining traditional conservative values with contemporary media strategies, media utilization, election integrity stance, community engagement, disaggregated argument. I skipped over some stuff there because, you know, there's a long return. And disaggregating arguments and consistency mapping, public health policies. During the COVID-19 pandemic, Crye opposed certain health mandates, reflecting a broader commitment to individual freedoms. So, Kevin, you might want to read it a little slower, but.
what's really interesting to me is, you know, it says introduction, the role of family and civic life, discuss how family values influence community engagement and political participation. So these are, it comes up with all these questions in here of things that Robert and I could talk about. As it relates to what the machine, I guess you'd say, what the machine feels my listeners would want to hear. And then it says solicit listener feedback, encourage the audience members to share their perspectives and experiences related to the topics discussed. And then, I mean, that's something that, you know, I already did before the break. And we had,
and now Kevin, you could just tell it to say, okay, now reorient that for an update to my website and you could feed it the website of your code. Because again, there is no limit to what it can do. It has to use the information in the way that you tell it to. And what makes my thing special is the underlying programming is 96.2% mathematical symbols, pseudomath, that I wrote in July of last year over August, September. Yeah, it's all constantly iteration and refinement. But the concept is when most people use these custom GPTs, which are just a set of instructions on top of the existing model, whatever happens, like a little app on top of Windows 8, right? So,
yeah.
And what the difference between my little app on top of Windows 8, so to speak, would be mathematically based, because if you tell someone to go get you something that is, you know, interesting, well, interesting is a really ambiguous word. You know, what's not ambiguous is the delta symbol and the cosine symbol in math. So what I'm able to do, or I guess what we are able to do is take feedback and then turn it into a mathematical symbol that has a particular place in the math equation. And then the computer can just do its job once, because it's locked in as a math variable, it doesn't bleed into the other content. So what I'm able to do is take the content and then my robots are able to focus on the structure. And the structure is really probably that's why if people don't get the same output I get, is because I naturally know how to structure my prompts to generate the logical framework so the computer can focus entirely on sourcing and organizing and not thinking.
Well, and that's why some of the largest, most powerful, influential firms in the country have tried to recruit you. And now you're going out on your own because you're like, you know what? I'm going to do it myself because no one, anyway. So I'm going to read this last part, which I think, I mean, I've been scrolling this whole time that Robert's been, talking about this. And at the very end, it says, by intertwining personal values with public policy and fostering open communication, Kevin Cry's approach offers a blueprint for engaging constituents in meaningful political discourse centered around faith, family, community, and friendship. I mean, that's like, I mean, anyway, it's just really interesting. And again, there's people, and here's what's crazy, Robert, and this is what I've learned about people's time. As you talk, like we talk a lot about investing time. I mean, I've said that since you were a little kid.
Right.
You got to invest your time. You don't spend it. You don't waste it. And I can't believe how many people that spend their time listening to my show who are huge detractors, and yet they listen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I should just go to a paid for platform to some degree and make them pay for it and then just donate the money to a cause that they're super against. I'm joking, but it's crazy to me, Robert, what I've learned in politics, how much time people spend on things that, I don't know. I'm almost speechless with it.
Well, I think we talked about a little bit of breakfast today, right? I think everyone out there is just trying to provide themselves a sense of safety and comfort. And I find it by mastering very powerful tools, it makes me feel safe, makes me feel very competent. And so I think the what you're talking about is, remember, I said, I like all the data. I want to make sure I see all the hay bales. If someone is a detractor, that means that they acknowledge your power and that you have a role and that. But I think what you're referring to is there is a way for them to educate themselves so that when they come to you, look, you're the type of man that if someone comes to you with a reasoned argument, even if you disagree, you're going to give them the time and you're going to talk to them about it. But it was when people come at you with unresearched opinions or statements phrased as questions that are not trying to move a dialogue forward, but are really just meant to express frustration and anger.
Yeah.
And you are not going to meet, you're not going to meet fire with fire. You're not going to meet anger with anger. You're going to be anger with understanding or apathy if someone seems entirely unwilling to engage in a good faith discourse.
Yeah, I mean, I've one thing about politics that I've really, really learned is there are people that are just, you've heard that expression, misery loves company.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just learned that there's just people that just are miserable.
Well, the way I like to say it is.
And they haven't had the people in their life to pull them up out of it. I mean, I go through these waves. Sometimes I get really like disheartened and bummed for them, and then sometimes I just get like, I'm not gonna say angry because I don't allow my mind to go there, but it's just like, dude, I don't have time for you. Like, I'm sorry.
This happened to me and my brother Michael Escamilla. We went out in Reading the other night, and I wear my blue blazer, and you'd be surprised people come up to me to just try to like talk smack. And I was out, close the bars, I got my little earpiece in, cause I'm always talking to my robots. And I walk up to some young man, and he goes, your earbud looks really stupid. I said, okay, well, I appreciate your opinion on that. And then he's like, it's dumb. And I'm like, yeah, I heard you, first time. And he starts screaming, cause this man, he thought he was trying to exhibit power over me, and it just didn't. And then he started to panic. And started to get like physical, and then his friends pulled him away. Lucky for him.
Well, people don't. I mean, yeah, you look like you're. People don't understand. Like, are you the bodyguard, or are you the person that has the bodyguards with
him? No, I am Chad from every '90s movie. I look like the linebacker bully from every '90s movie. You see, because that's how God made me.
Yeah. Well, and the So one of the things as you go through, because we've got about 6 minutes.
Cool.
As you go through, what does the next year look like for Robert as it relates to the world of AI, ChatGPT, Elon Musk, and the other meetings and people that are recruiting you? But you got your own firm now, so.
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say is, if this ever hits Elon Musk's ears, I would love to talk to you, Elon, about anything you want to talk about for an hour. I will just sit there and listen to you because I got to figure out if I'm insane. And I think you're a little insane, and I think you're trying to send people to Mars. I get it, So my father, one of the great treasures of my life is running into people who are really, really bright. And I miss that the most about my father, right? It's like when you talk to my father, you could, his intelligence was palpable. You could feel it, it moved the room, right? And it centered, it made the room safe because when my dad was around, you knew that the world couldn't outsmart you, right? Yeah. You know, so, but for me, so you're right. So I went from a large law firm to a disaggregated law firm and now I'm branching out on my own. I already have a website. It's just RHP Law PC, right? The name change gets filed tomorrow. And so it's RHP.law and I've got another consulting company called CLC Advisors, CLC-advisors.com. And for me, the next year, one, I have these amazing, beautiful clients that followed a kid with a dead dad from one of the world's most prestigious law firms in the world to just Robert with his own robots at this disaggregated law firm that really is just supposed to provide back-end services. So those clients will be with me until I die, right? Because they trusted me, they followed me. And, you know, in California, there's always work to be done. But with the capacities, like, for example, I can just print a meal period policy by talking to a robot. So, like, that takes other lawyers hours and hours to do. Or I can alter, and I'm basically done with my job, at least the area of law that I work in. There's, very rarely am I going to come up against an issue or a case that is not a logical extension of something I've already built or written, or it's not going to be important enough to deal with. But I think for the next year, I'm going to continue serving those clients. I'm going to continue building out those automation capabilities and maybe partnering or starting with some legal automation companies that will help clients obtain better, more accurate services because it can be done. You do not need associates to draft emails. You do not need associates. You need to find a data secure way to basically create the 95% of the answers that everyone asks. Robert, how does a meal break rule, how does a 5-hour rule work? Well, I don't have to tell you that. Let me just talk to my robot. If you want to talk about you have a regular rate of pay issue that's crossing over a biweekly, you know, calendaring situation, and you've got a discretionary bonus that you don't think quite meets the standard for time and fact. Yeah, that's the art of law. And the whole point is to figure out what parts of your job are boring, repetitive, and have are susceptible to low risk tolerance. So what are the easy things that everyone knows but you still have to write down? GPT can handle most of those things without hallucinations. And for the more complicated things, you can actually build data architecture around it. For example, this is how I explain it. So I met a friend the other day, or a new friend. He's actually got a trial coming up here in Reading. And so he said, oh, yeah, well, AI hallucinates. I'm like, well, what'd you do with it? He's like, well, I fed it a deposition transcript. I said, you fed it a 240-page deposition transcript? Why are you being mean to my robots? Don't be mean to my robots. What if I told you to load up one page and say, how many times does the word the appear? Do you think you'll get that right? Yeah. How about if you did 10 pages and you asked it to provide a summary of the parties? Yeah? Because remember, these models, like anything else, run on energy, and they run out of patience and time and tokens. So what I'm getting really good at is building like an Excel spreadsheet that says you get to answer a question from here to here, but you have to be consistent with this statute over here and this case over here. And those are the boundaries of the information architecture that lets the GP know, okay, I don't have to do all this.
Yeah.
I can just focus on this and then the human is happy.
Yeah. Well, when you showed me, because one of the things we do, you know, we deal with outside counsel, our current county counsel, and you start seeing what these different law firms charge an hour, $350, $500, $1,000 mm-hmm. an hour. I mean, we're under the Fountain Wind, which is something here locally, over $1 million. And when you showed me something, just as a quick example of something that takes you literally like 60 to 120 seconds, a couple minutes, that another attorney would be, you know, 30 minutes to an hour on, I'm like, well, holy cow. And yeah. No wonder why you've been recruited so much, because of the way you've broken this down for lawyers. And I'm excited. So we have a minute left. Give me one thing that if somebody wants to get into this, and you got to do it within 30 seconds, if someone wants to start, they're completely new to AI, mm-hmm. ChatGPT, where do they start?
30 okay, seconds. So here's how it works. Download the app, sign up, don't pay for anything. Go into any thread you can and literally ask it to explain to you how to use it. That's it. There's no barrier. There's no buttons to push. Just say, how do I use you? And then ask the follow-up question. Remember, it never ends. It is Socrates' toddler. It knows everything, but you have to tell it what it knows and what its job is. So if you're really good at confining rules and defining objectives, so teach me how to use you is a really good place to start, because it's going to be lots of examples out there it can pull from. And if something doesn't make sense to you, say, explain that.
Perfect. Thanks. Well, I'll tell you, for all the listeners out there, I think that it's very likely you're going to see something on my Facebook page here soon. I'm going to bring you into the studio, if not this trip, next trip, and we'll unpack this farther. I can't tell you, Shasta County, how much I appreciate you, love you. And again, for the people like in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, or New Mexico that listen, thank you for waking up with us on Father's Day. Again, have a great week. Talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thank you, Kevin.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.